I thought like I had kind of uncovered this thing that was going to be really valuable to everybody. I didn't want to freak out the other parents, but I did go to the administrators of the school and say, hey, look at what I learned about this building that our kids are in. It has toxic black mold and my kid's actually really sick. And what do you think we need to do? And they pretty much said, nothing. I'm sorry your kid is sick, but we don't want to upset the apple cart.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Your Indoor Air podcast brought to you by Change the Air Foundation. Today is my favorite kind of episode because it's a story of healing and hope by someone who was made sick from hidden mold and water damage and fought their way back to health. In fact, her journey has impacted her life so much that she has kind of shifted her career to help those who have been in similar situations. And we'll talk about that more at the end. But all that said, I want to introduce and welcome Jenny Johnson. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much, Kendra. It's an honor and a privilege to be part of your show and to get to share my story with people who are maybe in the thick of it or at the beginning of it and want to have some hope that healing is possible. And I'd be happy to share some of the mistakes that I made along the way that may help others not make the same mistakes.
You and I are very similar. I know when we first connected, we talked for a while because there, you know, we say this all the time that there may be certain details of people's stories and journeys that are different, but there's a lot of these common themes and things that tend to be true throughout. So we'll cover some of those. And I know when we were going through it, it seemed so hopeless and just not possible to be in a healthy home and to feel better. And I think it's important that people hear those stories. So let's kind of jump in because, you know, you were kind of touched personally. You had moved your family down south, right? And you were kind of going to pursue the homesteading lifestyle and amazing. I know you have pictures on your website about that journey, but that's kind of where things started to change. So tell us a little bit about that move and how it kind of started you down this path.
Yeah. We called it the grand experiment. And my husband and I were kind of in the middle of our professional careers. We were in our late 30s. We had a five-year-old who was going to be entering kindergarten, who had some neurodivergent tendencies. And we were a little bit nervous about the public school thing. And then we had a three-year-old. And we decided to kind of press pause on our life as we knew it, which is busy and kind of scattered, and purchase some land in Georgia. We were in Colorado at the time. We decided we were going to relocate to Georgia, purchase some land, and renovate the land and turn it into an organic farm. And we were going to learn how to live off the land and teach our kids how to do this too. We had this real desire for a more authentic lifestyle that was more in touch with land, the whole ecosystem, and kind of checking out of the society that we were starting to feel kind of stressed out with, just being kind of cookie cutter in our little neighborhood. So long story short, we found a piece of land and we started renovating it. And it was so fun. It was, for several years, it was the idyllic lifestyle. I decided to homeschool the kids so that we could all just sort of wake up and the kids would run around in their pajamas and bare feet around the land and they'd catch frogs and then we would study the frogs and that would be school. Like, it was just so sweet. We built out organic gardens and a pond that we stocked with fish. We put solar panels on the house so that we could run the whole house on solar, dug a well, had that kind of tagged in. Everything was totally self-sufficient if needed. Everything was solar powered. We started selling our produce at the farmer's market and our kids would run the cash register and that was their math. It was really, really sweet. But we also learned that living that closely to the land means you're going to live really closely to biotoxins and insects and critter and just things that can make you sick, especially if you have the genetics that our family turned out to have. So all of that, the kind of downfall really started with my husband. He was running a tractor, which he had never done before. He kind of learned how to run a tractor and was sort of tilling up some of the soil that we were trying to turn into a pasture. And he had an accident in the tractor and hit his head pretty hard. And he was found, we don't know how long, kind of crumpled up, you know, by the pedals on the floor. He was found, I found him, and we don't know how long he was out, but he had had a concussion. And he's kind of one of those guys, like the Energizer Bunny, nothing really gets him down, super tough, strong guy's guy. He recovered and seemed fine. Like, not a big deal. I made him go get checked out, didn't have like an aneurysm. So we're like, okay, well, keep going with life as usual. Not long after that, he, you know, living in this lifestyle, there were ticks everywhere in our pasture. And so we got used to coming in every night before we'd like shower and go to bed and doing tick checks on each other. And we had these little tick pliers that we had bought from Amazon. And whenever we saw a tick embedded, we'd pull it out. Like, this happened often. We all had many embedded ticks. But my husband had one that looked like it had been embedded for a long time, and it had the bullseye rash, and he developed a fever, the acute symptoms that are associated with Lyme disease. So he pursued treatment for acute Lyme disease. He felt so much better on the antibiotics. He went through a month, which is kind of the long version of standard care for Lyme disease. He got to the end of his month and the doctor said, okay, well, you're done now and we're going to pull you off antibiotics. That's like the longest treatment that is allowed per CDC. And so you're done. So as soon as he was pulled off the antibiotics, all of the symptoms came back and even worse, but he couldn't find a doctor to treat him. And eventually he found a doctor in Washington, D.C. who treated chronic Lyme disease. And so we would travel there every 3 months, and he was on an in-depth antibiotic and antifungal protocol. And I will just say the treatment was almost as painful as the disease itself. He felt terribly, and this went on for several years. And so he developed this chronic Lyme disease, post-Lyme syndrome, whatever we want to call it. He became bedridden and on disability. And so this was my high functioning Energizer Bunny kind of guy. He was used to racing mountain bikes and running multiple businesses, and now he's in bed. So I professionally was a physical therapist, pediatric physical therapist. I was working very part-time because I was homeschooling the kids, running the farmstead. But when my husband went on disability, which doesn't pay for a whole lot, and he needed care, I needed to go back to work. And so I went back to work in the local school system, working at some local schools and also working in babies' homes, all kinds of different homes that I was being exposed to. Meanwhile, I put my kids in a school program because I couldn't go to work and homeschool them anymore. Put them in this kind of homeschool tutorial program that happened to take place in the basement of an old church that was being renovated. We all thought, great, it's free, you know, like the, at least the space is free. So we're just paying the teachers. It seemed like a real win-win, but nobody should have been in that building. And we found that out the hard way. So on day one of sending my kids to school, and my son was now in fourth grade and he had never been in what we called school. He was my neurodivergent kiddo, presented with some Asperger's-like symptoms that we were managing at home, doing a lot of different things to try to have him have a great normal life, but maybe avoid some of the stresses that we knew would be tough for him associated with school and in social environments. But we didn't have a choice. We put him in this program. And he came home on the first day of school saying he didn't feel well. And I didn't want to add to his anxiety and play into that. And I'm like, you look fine. You know, you're probably just a little, you know, stressed. First day of school, no big deal. Let's go get ice cream. You know, second day of school, same thing. Mom, I really don't feel well. Third day of school, fourth day of school. I didn't even think to ask him how he felt, because at the time I was used to my kids maybe having a runny nose or throwing up or something, but something invisible, I didn't think to ask more about. Several months into school, I asked him, well, what are you feeling? You look fine. What do you mean you don't feel well? And he said, my chest is so tight. I feel like I can't breathe. And whenever I'm at school, I just feel like my brain's not working. Like, I feel like I can't think. I have no idea what the teacher's saying. My brain is just turned off. And I've had diarrhea every day since I started school. I haven't been able to sleep. Started listing all of these different symptoms. And I was like, oh, not breathing well and diarrhea and your brain isn't working. Like, this is kind of freaking me out. So I took him to his pediatrician, and his pediatrician was amazing. She had happened to have done some kind of program, like a residency or something, in sick building syndrome when she was in medical school. And so she was listening to his symptoms and noting this is some kind of systemic issue. It's not just like he's got a virus or, you know, something is going on that might be related to an environmental exposure. So she started asking, where does he go to school? When did these symptoms start? I was like, well, they started on the first day of school at this building. She said, I know that building. That's my church. We are not having church in that building right now for a good reason. I cannot believe they're allowing people to be in that building. It is in terrible disrepair. They're doing all kinds of renovations on it for safety and health reasons, not just, you know, like aesthetic reasons. Let's do some testing and see what he's been exposed to. So we started doing some testing for different environmental toxicants, including mold. And it turns out mold was just off the charts. There was a lot of Stachybotrys, what we know of as toxic black mold. So we pull him out of that school. And now I'm trying to work and homeschool him again and take care of my son. Meanwhile, these exposures that I was getting at work, I think you said that you've worked in schools. I know a lot of people, we talk about public schools and the propensity for water damage and poor indoor air quality at so many public schools. These schools were not in great shape. I was wondering why every day I came home from school, from, you know, working at school or these different babies' homes that I was visiting to treat them at their house, I would come home and have to climb into bed like I had just taken 10 Benadryl. I felt exhausted, not just like a good day's work kind of tired, but so flat out tired. And I would get into bed and I would have these headaches and I'd be like, man, work is really taking a lot out of me. I just thought it was the stress of trying to manage my sick son and my husband and the farm. So, you know, I kept putting myself in this environment. So now I'm starting to develop insomnia, significant fatigue. In comes the suicidal ideation out of nowhere. I'm like, what in the heck is this? I know life is kind of stressful right now, but it's not that kind of bad. Why do I suddenly want to just walk into the woods and not come back? I'm having these weird, like some, it felt like a dark force had taken over my brain and was feeding it really dark thoughts. And this was really scary. I felt like my brain had been hijacked. So that was one of my big symptoms. I had a lot of like weird PMS symptoms where I felt like I had the flu for like a week before my period. Sorry if that's too much information, but I think that's relevant. A lot of women note that they have these weird symptoms relevant to their cycle. I had that. I felt like my brain was on fire for like a week, and I felt sick and flu-y and dizzy for about a week. And this was new, before my cycle every month. So like I was saying, now three of us, my husband, my son who was pulled out of school, myself, all had these weird symptoms. Trying to make this story as short as I can, but not leaving out too many of the fun details. So I start getting online, you know, Googling and everything, and find the work of Dr. Richie Shoemaker and his website, Surviving Mold. So this is back in like 2015. When there really wasn't much information about mold illness, SIRS, biotoxin. So this was all I could find, but it spoke to what we were all feeling. All of the symptoms listed out, I was like, these are my husband's, these symptoms are my son's, and these are me. It was a little bit different in all of us, but I realized, I think we have this. And this makes sense why my husband with Lyme disease is not getting better and why his symptoms kind of look like my son's with mold exposure and mine. And so we followed the directions that were on the website. We did the online vision test, the visual contrast sensitivity test. We failed that. We went ahead and ordered the labs that were on there. And all of our labs looked like a mess according to those reference ranges. So before going down this path too far, we decided to book a consult with Richie Shoemaker, honestly, to see if the whole thing was quackery. We were like, okay, either we are going down this tunnel and this is real and this is kind of a big deal, Or we can just say, no, this is not a thing. Like, this is quackery. So we made this appointment. We sent him our ERMI scores. We sent him all of our labs. And he reviewed them all with us. It was so wonderful. And he said that three of us, the three who were symptomatic, I also have a daughter who was not at all symptomatic. Three out of the four of us did meet diagnostic criteria for SIRS. And he gave us some great tips on next steps for our health and next steps for our home. And my husband and I were writing notes. We were recording the whole thing because we knew we'd forget it because we both had like total memory issues. I still have that recording and I go back to it sometimes and just think, wow, this was the beginning of our journey. So this is where we started making some mistakes. We did not have, there was more information about the medical side of mold illness out there than on the environmental side. And so we knew we had to get out of mold, but we didn't really know what that meant, right? And a lot of us have made mistakes in this category before we realize, you know, the right way to do it. And this is one of the things included. That you and I are both. Yeah. So we're both passionate in about
yep.
us at this point. If I could do this over again, this is where I would slow down and make sure I got the right information before diving into let's rip open our floors and see what's under them, you know, without containment or without any understanding of what we might do with what we found. But I think so many people do this. They find out maybe they'll do an ERMI test or they see a sign of a leak. And instead of saying, let's call a professional to come and inspect this the proper way, maybe even set up a containment system before they do any kind of demo work to see what's behind there. You kind of dive in yourself because you want to know what's behind that wall or what's that stain leading to. And then you realize, oh my goodness, I think we just exposed our everything to that nasty mold that now I'm looking at.
That's such a good point because people panic, right?
Yeah.
Or they need to see it before it's real. And one of my personal mottos is research before you react.
Yes.
Because sometimes in our rush to handle something, we handle it wrong, even if we're well-intentioned or even if we think the advice we got is good, and we make the situation worse. Yes. And so the first temptation, and I know you probably get this, like people see something starting to bubble up, maybe the drywall or maybe even just a little bit of like mold growth on a baseboard, and they spray it, they wipe it. I'm going to get rid of it. No.
Yeah.
Interesting. Stop, take a breath and evaluate the situation.
Yes.
Disturbing it without proper precautions, I'm saying this just for anyone listening, is so much worse. So if you're in that situation, that's great advice. Sorry to cut you off, but I thought it was a PSA to go there.
So. I know that's something that we both learned the hard way and are so passionate about helping others avoid. So that was one of the mistakes that we made. But basically what Dr. Shoemaker told us was any house is remediatable. And if you love this house that you have built a lifestyle around, you have this homestead, you love living there, it may need to be pulled down to the studs. But I mean, if you want to stay here, you know, you can get it done. And if you have the right amount of money and help, any house can be fixed ultimately. But you also have to think about the lifestyle. You know, we have what he calls the dreaded genes, which I don't like that term, but it basically means that we could develop a chronic inflammatory response, this chronic syndrome that feels awful from a variety of biotoxins and not just mold, but the ticks that were everywhere. And we had a huge compost bin that we would go, we didn't even think to wear a mask, but we would, you know, with pitchforks be turning the compost and breathing in all of the yumminess, you know. We had a big chicken coop with like 100 chickens in there with, you know, cleaning out the chicken, you know, with the straw or the hay with the chicken feces in there and all that has in it, the feed for the goats and the guineas and the chickens, the feed itself, you pour that into the can and it poofs out and the mycotoxins that could be in there. We had a pond that we dug. We were not very good at maintaining it properly and had a good bit of blue green algae growing on it. So here we were with likely cyanobacteria. Yeah. We had brown recluse spiders everywhere. Yeah. So we were living in pretty much a nightmare for somebody with our genetics. And so when he kind of painted the picture that you can stay here if you want to, but you have to be really, you know, diligent about your practices. And you live in a place, we were in North Georgia at the time, where, you know, a lot of your friends or your kids' friends' houses are probably going to be more contaminated for their health standards than what's going to help them recover, their school, your church, the grocery store. Like, you might kind of have to live in a bubble, at least for a period of time while you're recovering. And you're going to be more prone to relapses with your genetics. And we just started thinking, oh my goodness, like maybe we need to go back to Colorado where we came from. Not that Colorado is perfect. There's no place that is mold and biotoxin resistant, but it was a different lifestyle. If we moved back to the suburbs and we didn't have all of those other influences and we live someplace a little bit drier where things dry out, maybe before microbes set in, you know, if you set it in the sun. We decided to part ways with our organic homesteading lifestyle, and we moved back to Colorado, bought a house with a negative ERMI score, a zero hurts me. We pretty much bought it sight unseen because we're like, we just want like something clean. And it passed, it was in meticulous condition, or the previous owners have been very meticulous. It was immaculate. They had every little thing labeled. They had all of their receipts from all the work ever done. You know, the kind of people that you want to buy a house from. So we bought this house and we moved in and we started to heal. And we followed the Shoemaker protocol. Back then, all of the doctors, there weren't that many of them.
No, there weren't.
That you had to see them, you had to see them in person. And there were none in Colorado at the time. And so here were three of us needing medical care. None of this is paid for by insurance, or very little, you know, some of the labs maybe. But so, you know, and this is after 3 years of Lyme care for my husband, which already drained our account, and him being on disability, me working in the school system, finances were totally drained. So this was tough. We had to borrow money from family. I know the financial devastation is real for so many, and we were there. Luckily, we had family to really help us when we had nothing. We had to sell our farm at a loss. But we found a local functional medicine doctor who had heard of SIRS and Dr. Shoemaker, had heard, was kind of aware of mold illness, had never treated it before. But we were like, that's good enough. As long as you're like, you believe us and you're open-minded, that's good enough. We purchased something called the Physician's Guide to Understanding and Treating Biotoxin Illness. It's a $99 guide. It's a PDF that is downloadable on the Surviving Mold website. It was Dr. I'll remember her name because I want to give her credit. Yvonne Berry. Dr. Yvonne Berry took the time to write up this, like, I still have it. Actually, my computer is resting on my binder that has all of the printouts. I printed the whole thing out because I would take it to doctors with me. But it's like, you know, it's over 100 pages. I took this guide to this functional medicine doctor and I said, can we go through this protocol together? Like, we'll read page by page, like what we need to do next. And so it was the blind leading the blind. But we worked through the Shoemaker protocol that way, just using this guide as a guide. And Kendra, it was amazing. Between getting out of the exposure, which is absolutely critical, I think, getting out of the exposure, giving our bodies that chance to not be taking in new toxins, and then taking binders to remove the stored toxins, working on some of the other just accumulated dysregulations with hormones and other things that we had all kind of built, you know, on top of the inflammation, we all ultimately got 100% better. And I tell people not even 100%, but beyond 100%, I'm like 150% healthier than I was before I got sick, because I've had to level up all of my wellness practices. I was totally taking for granted my sleep and stress, my emotional health, our marital health, spiritual health, nutrition, you know, kind of doing the basics. But I did not realize how important those pieces are to really having a strong foundation and being resistant to relapse and just feeling great. So now, you know, learning the importance of all of those things really from my functional medicine doctor, I think implementing all the lifestyle medicine, positive mindset, healthy habits has really helped our family be resistant to relapse. But I'll tell you, Kendra, what's really cool about my son's recovery is not only did his lungs heal, he went from having pulmonary fibrosis. His lungs had stiffened to where he couldn't breathe, and he was not, it wasn't responsive to an inhaler. It wasn't just classic asthma. His lung tissue healed. He does not have pulmonary fibrosis anymore. He's the captain of an ultimate Frisbee team that plays at 8,500 feet of elevation, and they just won the state championship. He is a scholar athlete. He's been accepted to all the colleges that he applied to. And you would never guess that he had ever been neurodivergent. He not only recovered his SIR symptoms, but all of the symptoms that he had had up until he was 10 that we just thought were kind of, Asperger's related and just kind of who he was genetically, that all actually normalized. Everybody's story is different. I don't want to say that that's going to be the case with every kiddo out there, but that was amazing to witness as a parent and to give that hope to other families that this could be a huge contributing factor to a variety of presentations behaviorally, developmentally for kiddos who are not maybe developing normally or are acting up. My husband, who had been on disability, as soon as he got on the Shoemaker protocol and out of exposure, I would say about 6 months later, he was feeling well enough to get off disability. He thought he might be on it for life, right? Off disability, back to running multiple businesses and back to running racing mountain bikes. So the Energizer Bunny is back. All of that PMS weird stuff totally went away. Like that was the first symptom to normalize. I never got that weird symptom again. And if I do, I know I'm in exposure. That PMS weirdness, the suicidal ideation completely went away. The fatigue completely went away. That sleepiness went away. The insomnia lasted for a little while, and that lasted for a little while for my son too. That was probably the last symptom to normalize for us that took maybe another year or two to really work on. I'm sure I missed a million details in there that would be valuable, but I think I've talked enough at this point to let you.
No, this is so helpful. You did such a nice job. There's so many points here to unpack, from everything from reiterating how the same people in the same home had different symptoms, right? And that is one thing I think that confuses people, that they think if indoor air quality, if mold or something like that were a problem, we'd all be sick in the same way. And it's not the case. And, you know, how, you know, you talk about your move to Georgia being the beginning, but then now that you're in a prioritizing just your everything health-wise, your home, and I know your nutrition and your food and your indoor air quality, your son's symptoms that he had, you know, before he was 10 have changed. And so some people find that, yeah, we all have that moment in our journey where things really get started, but looking back, there are clues that maybe it started before then. And your story really is a testament to the power that our home and our indoor air can have in our health. And how many people are being misdiagnosed or mistreated for, you know, anxiety and depression and all sorts of things. Yeah. And it's because we're not asking questions about our home. And so that's something I know you're working so passionately to change. And it's something that I hope becomes a standard part of our conversation, you know, as we go forward. One of the things that, you know, you hinted on too, was that this illness, it's not only physically demanding, it's financially draining, it's emotionally draining, mentally it's exhausting. And I'm curious, because you said something, you know, you found a doctor who believed you. And there are a lot of people who have family members or coworkers or spouses, even physicians, who just don't believe that it's real. How did this experience change your relationship with, you know, your husband and you, or with some of your family members or friends? Because it's not like if you get cancer or your house burns down, people have they kind of have a framework to work from. This is something that is not easily explainable and it's not always understood. So talk to us about that piece, because that's important.
Yeah. I think compared to so many people whose stories that I hear, we were pretty lucky with getting some doctors who didn't just gaslight us. We had a little bit of that, but you know, the first doctor we took this to was the one who pointed us in the right direction. And I'm so grateful for her open-mindedness. She had never heard of these CSIRS labs before, but she said, let's just run them and it'll be a learning experience. Not many doctors are humble enough and open-minded enough to say, let's just see what we can learn here. And then same thing with the functional medicine doctor that we found out here. He was open-minded and willing to follow a protocol that had been in a binder rather than saying, no, let me do it my way. He added some really valuable stuff, but that humility and open-mindedness, I think, can be really hard to find in the medical community. We did have a few other doctors along the way. My primary care physician thought it was all stress. And I was stressed. I was very stressed. But I think it was the stress that actually maybe upregulated or primed my genetics to not be able to handle the exposures that I'd been handling all of my life. And all of a sudden, I was sick from. So yes, stress was important, but stress wasn't the only issue anymore. Stress, I think, was the priming event. And so he wanted me to go to an MBSR class, an 8-week mindfulness-based stress reduction class. And I did. But this was while we were getting our ERMI results back, while we were trying to figure out how to remediate our house. It was not the right timing or the right intervention for where I was to be trying to not be in my thoughts and just reduce my stress when I actually needed to be using my brain and critical thinking about some very urgent, timely things. And so I think that stress reduction, nervous system activities can be really great for many people who are in like a sympathetic overdrive or in that overwhelmed, like shutdown kind of state. But timing it with where are they in the whole process? Where are they practically with what they need to be doing? And is this the right time and kind of manner of intervening? But back to your question with unbelievers, we got that with my son's school. Yeah. So I thought like I had kind of uncovered this thing that was going to be really valuable to everybody. I didn't want to freak out the other parents, but I did go to the administrators at the school and say, hey, look at what I learned about this building that our kids are in. It has toxic black mold and my kid's actually really sick. And what do you think we need to do? And they pretty much said, nothing. I'm sorry your kid is sick, but we don't want to upset the apple cart. Like, this is a free space to be educating our kids. And you need to understand that's really rare. And families are counting on this for their education. And I was like, yeah, I get that. But this could be a health issue for a lot of other people. Do you want to let people know that in case you're not feeling well, let us know? And they're like, no, let's not freak anybody out. And so we pretty much got excused from the school. There was some, I guess, embarrassment or feeling kind of ashamed instead of feeling like, I'm so sorry this has happened to your family and how can we come around you and help? Can we bring you meals? I felt kind of shunned instead. Like, we have this weird health condition. Don't tell anybody else because it's weird. No one's heard of it. And it might freak everybody else out. It might upset the apple cart. And so we kind of felt like we had this secret that we couldn't share and felt this kind of shame or I don't know how to explain it. We would tell our friends and family and they'd kind of nod and sort of furrow their brow, kind of respectfully listen. But you could kind of tell they kind of thought maybe we were going off the deep end. They thought we were weird enough for being organic farmers and homeschooling our kids. And now it's like, oh, you think you're getting hurt by mold? Okay. You know,
it's just an allergy or mold is everywhere. You know,
mold is everywhere. Right.
Understanding that maybe is not complete or a little outdated, that it is unsurprising or it's not surprising, I should say, that the school responded in that way. I was, you and I have talked before, I was a teacher and in one instance, I'd notified the school that my son and I were having problems and they had said, oh, well, we took care of the mold and water damage. And then later the story kind of changed. And if we test for it and we find it, then we have to do something about it. So their plan was not to test for it because they didn't have the money to fix it. So it was private. So, but public schools have, challenges as well when it comes to those environments. And it's definitely something we are working to change. It's to an earlier point you made, Scott Forsgren has one of my favorite quotes and he says, and I apologize, Scott, if I butcher this, but, you know, we can't expect to be, you know, healthier internally than our external environment. So sometimes, you know, you mentioned your mindfulness class or your husband's Lyme treatment. It's not going to be as effective as it could be if you're still living in an environment that's making you sick. And it's not that that environment can't be saved or remediated. The questions become, and this goes back to what you said in the beginning and something we say all the time, do you have the money to remediate it properly and correctly and address the house, you know, kind of holistically? Do you have access to the right people who know how to do this correctly? Do you have just the emotional bandwidth or desire to do it? Does it make sense? You know, you guys were talking about the other biotoxins and things in your environment, and that's a lot to battle. And so I, you know, making the choice to move, I imagine, wasn't easy, but there are so many factors at play. So somebody, you know, getting treatment, you have to also address the environment. And I know some Shoemaker doctors, we saw one, our story started around the same time, but you know, almost 10 years ago. And, you know, they won't even treat you sometimes unless you're in a healthier environment. Doesn't have to be perfect because there is no perfect home, but, and that's because it's, you know, you can be wasting money and not get as far as you need to if you're constantly battling exposure.
Yeah, that's very true.
So much there. So you guys are back in Colorado and you're doing great. I know you kind of said already looking back some of the things you would do differently, but if someone's listening now and they're kind of in the middle of this journey, or they think, you know, maybe mold and indoor air quality and water damage is a problem, what would you say to them?
Yeah, there's so much more available now that if I was going through with this now, or if I was advising somebody who's going through this now, there are resources that I could point people towards that just weren't available then. So I can't really say I wish I had done things differently, because we did the best I feel like we could have with what was available, except for one thing. And I'll mention this and then I'll give some other tips. Back then, even as I train a licensed healthcare professional, I'm a physical therapist, I should have been trained by the allopathic model that stress can disrupt our autonomic nervous system and can make us not sleep well, not digest our food well, not detox well. I did not really realize that not sleeping well, being really stressed, not eating well, not tending some of my spiritual practices and tending my marriage, I didn't realize that that could also actually impact my physiology and increase my symptoms. I was just thinking, who cares if we're staying up all night cleaning stuff, or who cares if I'm super stressed out during this move? We'll figure that out later. I'll recover. And I think there was a lot of collateral damage that could have been prevented if we had gone a little slower and kind of minded a lot of the things that you just talked about, kind of where were we with our capacity for this process? Maybe even slowing down a little bit, tending to ourselves, checking in with each other, working on our stress, not working until 10 o'clock at night and ordering pizza. But, you know, we were living on an organic farm. Let's make the salad and let's call it on, you know, the cleaning or the moving prep. Let's go to bed and let's love on each other. But, you know, my kids, they have a lot of trauma associated with this time of their lives that I didn't have a healthy respect for. I just thought all of that was fluff on the sides. We just need to get out of exposure. So when we talk about this balance of like the inner environment and the outer environment, it's really delicate and tricky, right? It's like, how do we tend both simultaneously at the same time? We need to take care of our exposures in our outer environment, but can we do it in a way that honors inner safety too, and without creating that collateral damage that can then impact recovery or cause trauma that perpetuates for years and years afterwards. I will say my daughter, she was not symptomatic at all. She has the genetics that the rest of our family have, but they had apparently not been turned on. All of her labs were beautiful. She had no symptoms. She was in the same school. We actually kept her there. We didn't really know how to manage that, but she was super happy there. So we left her at that school. She was fine. When she got sick is when we told her we were moving. Mm-hmm. And when we told her she had to leave her school, leave all of her stuffed animals and toys, say goodbye to all of her friends, all of our extended family who lived in the Georgia area, leave our farmstead, our whole lifestyle, and that we were going to move to Georgia or to back to Colorado that she didn't remember and start over life in the suburbs. That was so traumatic to her that the stress of that, kind of like the stress of caring for my husband and my son, I feel like triggered my illness, that trauma of the move without us doing it more delicately and handling it more delicately. She then became symptomatic during the move, probably being exposed to some of the dust, but then the trauma of, I can't believe we're doing this. And then we got to Colorado. While three of us were getting better, she actually was going downhill with that trauma response, starting her biotoxin illness, which then she recovered from. But it just makes me realize how important they both are. So yeah, tending our inner environment. And like we've said before, pressing pause when you want to dive into a project and just get her done, making sure you have the right information and the right professionals to help you, whether that's medical professionals or environmental professionals. Take your time, ask all the right questions, get online, go to Change the Air Foundation. They have great resources there. Take my course or come join my community. There's great resources there. There's lots of websites now that have great resources, and those weren't available before. So figuring out what are the questions that we need to ask to make sure that we're going to get the right inspector and remediator, that is so worth it. So I think that's probably one of the biggest things. It's so tempting when you find out that your house is making you sick to just fix it, because it kind of like starts this panic response of like, oh my gosh, like every breath that I take is bad. Let's fix it today, tomorrow, call somebody, anybody. And that tends to make it worse when you just call anybody or have your husband just like put on a hazmat suit and dive in and, you know, figure it out as we go.
No, absolutely. That's, and Michael Pinto, he's one of our advisors at the foundation. He has a saying, he talks about sometimes, you know, bad remediation or poor remediation is sometimes worse than no remediation. And again, it just reiterates that point. And something you kind of said too, because that PTSD response is very real, especially when you get to the other side. Sometimes you feel like you're just waiting for the other shoe to drop, or in this house, it's going to go wrong. And, you know, healing is not a straight line. And sometimes it's two steps forward and one step back. I think, you know, people need to realize that you didn't get sick overnight, and you're not going to be back to 100% overnight. And that's okay. It may take some time. You know, I think the other thing that I kind of heard from you, and a message I like to share with people too, it's about progress over perfection. You are going to make mistakes in this journey. We all do. I still do. I'm sure you still do, Jenny, right? But it's about making fewer mistakes than you did before, learning to course correct. If you do have setbacks in your health, okay, we're aware. What are we going to do to get on top of it? And all those things matter. I know we're almost out of time, but in just a couple minutes, if you wouldn't mind, you kind of have refocused your career to kind of help people. Just tell us broadly about what you're doing now, because I think it's a perfect example of someone who's turning what is a life-changing experience, you know, the lemon into lemonade scenario. What are you up to?
Yeah, well, so my degree is in biology. And when I was going through my undergrad experience, I bounced back and forth between the environmental science side of biology and the like human biology and pre-med. And I couldn't decide like environmental science, pre-med. Long story short, I almost went to public health school. That was really, you know, I really cared about just a healthier universe for everybody and that interplay of environmental science and human health. But I wanted to work more directly with people. And so I ended up going into physical therapy, and there's kind of a story behind that. But after this whole journey, I realized, A, I couldn't go into schools and babies' homes. I didn't even really want to work in various clinics anymore and not have control over my environment. I might be robust enough now where I could, but I wanted more control over my environment. And I realized that there was a huge unmet need in the CSRS community with what our family went through, and realizing how few doctors knew about this, how many patients there probably were out there who didn't know what they had, or if they did find out what they have, they were kind of like us. How do you get in with a doctor? What do you do while you're waiting? How do you find the right inspector and remediator? And who can help me with all of this collateral damage? Even when we do get in with a doctor and they get us on binders and supplements and things like that, what about my strained marriage? What about our finances? What about my trauma? Like, mm-hmm. what about all of the other stuff? Like, who helps me with that? Who helps me put my life back together? And so I went and got trained as a functional medicine health coach, which gave me a lot of insight into more of the inner environment, really, lifestyle practices, mindset practices for the nervous system, for dealing with our inner environment. So I decided to pair that with my training. I went through formal training in the Shoemaker Protocol, and I decided to be a service coach. I just kind of made up, I'm a functional medicine health coach and a Shoemaker proficiency partner. I'll just do service coaching. And I didn't even know what that would look like, other than I would basically hang a shingle on my website and see if people came and try to help them. And I didn't have a business model. I didn't know if anyone would come. And many people came. Somehow people found me. My name is on the Surviving Mold website. And maybe I was, you know, a dot on a map where they thought maybe that person can help me in Colorado. Everybody was asking the same questions and needing the same kind of support. And so I thought, this would be so much more fun to do in a group. Like, yeah. They all feel like they're the only ones. What if we do this in community? So I developed a group coaching program, which ended up turning into like a systematic 12 module program where we would go through all of the outer environment considerations, inspections, remediations, small particle cleaning, contents, tips for finding a healthy home, air purifiers, all of that. And then we would move into the inner environment and learn nervous system practices, nutrition, gut health, getting our sleep back, getting our physical fitness back, tending our relationships and our spiritual health. So I tried to pull together all the things that I felt like I needed and that I realized a lot of my clients also felt like they needed. And I've been doing that since 2020, I guess. And I've since turned it into an online course so people can just DIY it. If they don't want to do like the live cohort thing, and if support groups aren't really their thing, they can just do it as an online course. So I still do one-on-one coaching and consulting, but my favorite thing is facilitating community, you know, where we can feel less lonely in this, realize that we're not crazy, we're not the only ones, and go on a healing journey in community with other people who get it. And so that's my favorite thing. And that's what I provide through Simplified Wellness Designs.
And we'll link to that in the show notes of this. Thank you, Jenny, so, so much for being here, for sharing your story and sharing all your lessons learned. I know it's so important to you that, you know, to just genuinely, you know, you want to help people. And so thank you for offering a space for people and connecting with Change the Air Foundation and allowing us to tell your story, because this problem is widespread. We spend 90% of our time indoors. We, you know, EPA estimates that, you know, 50% of buildings, you know, can have leaks. We know that number is probably higher. What's in our air matters, and it matters to your health. And we want you to feel, you know, your best self and live your best life. And if you don't want to miss a great interview like this in the future, sign up for our newsletter, because it really is the best way to get great tips and information like this directly to your inbox. We'll see you next time. Thanks so much.